Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we've got a bit of crazy news to discuss. Our game, How Do You Survive, makes a return. We've got an in-depth review of Army of the Dead, which we'll save for the end, so you're not spoiled. And our topic this week is the art of the trailer. What makes for a great movie trailer? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow host, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello. I am here.
Okay, and joining us is Christy Flores.
Hey, Aaron, how are you?
I am wonderful. John Davenport cannot be here this week, so Christy is graciously filling in. And it was actually, she's a Patreon supporter, and this is her topic. She actually chose this topic. So if it sucks, it's all on you.
Fine, I own it. Fair enough.
That's how we like to get people excited about what we're going to talk about. Be positive. Why did you want to talk about trailers? I'm just curious before we get there.
So when I think about movie trailers, I really think about the movie experience. And we've talked about our excitement about going back to the theaters after not really being able to go this last year. And we've seen two movies in the theaters this year. We saw Back to the Future. And then we recently just went and saw, I don't remember what the movie was, but we just went and saw it. And I missed.
Was that good? Really, really left an impression.
I know. What? I don't remember what it was.
Nobody? That one came out recently.
Spiral?
Yeah,
no,
there's that.
I won't go see that. I watched it with the kids. I don't know. I don't remember what it was, but it was good nonetheless.
Sounds like
it. And
yeah, I'm convinced.
Oh, Raya and the Last Dragon. That's what it was. Okay.
I hope they put that on the box art. So good, you'll forget about it.
I'm just too busy of a person. But I started thinking about how great it was to be able to sit and watch the previews and get excited about what's coming, especially after I've been binge listening to the podcast and getting caught up on all the episodes that I hadn't been able to listen to. And then I thought about all the excitement and when I was regularly going to the theaters about kind of making that mental checklist about, okay, I can't wait to see this one in the theater. That one I'm probably going to rent. And then I started thinking about all the work that actually goes into making a trailer. Whether or not it's good or not, it still takes a lot of effort. And I never really put a lot of thought into that until I watched the movie The Holiday with Cameron Diaz. And when it opens up and you see your team trying to put the last minute touches on the Lindsay Lohan Dreams Franco trailer. And I was really thinking about it. And that's why I sent you the message to say, hey, have you guys ever done an episode dedicated to the art of the trailer? Because I think a trailer can make or break your experience. You might miss a great movie if the trailer sucks. Or you might get there in the theater, and I have an example of this later on in the episode.
I have lots.
You're so excited to see a movie and then just absolutely let down, either because, well, in 3 minutes you saw the whole movie, or it just wasn't what you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And sometimes you get like a great trailer that leads to a horrible trilogy. I'm just saying, like, sometimes that happens. It just, and there's lightsabers. All right, are you guys ready to get into the news roundup, and then we'll go into the rest of it? This is everything that has happened of note in the past week. You ready?
Ready.
Ready, Freddy.
Okay. Well, stay ready, because you're about to run amok, because Hocus Pocus 2 is confirmed for Disney Plus in 2022. All the lead actresses are back. They're each now officially the same ages as the witches they played in the original movie. That's great. So you got that to look forward to. Also, there can be only one Highlander, and he looks to be Henry Cavill in Chad Stahelski's reboot of the classic film. Idris Elba will be reprising Luther in a feature film that shoots this fall. I love that show. That's super exciting to me. Fast 9 has already revved up over $160 million overseas, proving there's a lot of life left in movie theaters. Don't let the media fool you. Timothée Chalamet is playing Willy Wonka in an origin story of Roald Dahl's famous character. If I said his name wrong, I don't care. That's what you get for putting that little thingy on top of your E. It's weird. Stop it. Amazon is locking down MGM Studios to the tune of $9 billion. Put your pinky to your mouth. $9 billion. So James Bond is getting that two-day shipping for his License to Kill renewal. And in what has to be the weirdest news in frickin' forever, Kevin Spacey is going to return to acting in an Italian film called The Man Who Drew God, in which he is said to be playing a detective investigating a blind artist who was wrongfully accused of sex abuse. Weird choice, Kevin. Weird choice. Now, of all of that, what do you want to talk about? And please say Kevin Spacey.
That's the first thing I go to, is this weird choice of Kevin Spacey playing himself as an artist.
No, he's the detective investigating himself.
Oh, he's investigating. Okay,
What it sounds like he's trying to do. He's like, look, I'm investigating a guy who didn't do anything, man. Just does weird Christmas YouTube videos. That's all. That's all I'm guilty of. He's guilty of.
Yeah, this is a really strange... I even just from the production company and everything to greenlight a film like this starring Kevin Spacey is just really bizarre given his history for his sexual misconduct and abuse.
Allegedly. I don't want to get sued. Allegedly.
Alleged abuse of young children. And I don't know. I don't know why he thought this would be the best take to come back to his career with. You know, even Mel Gibson has had some questionable moves in his returns, but he waited a little while before he did, what was the movie that Fat Man, where he is married to a black woman, given his history was questionable. And I don't know why some of these men feel so bold in their efforts.
I would say I was surprised, but I'm not. given Kevin Spacey's film history alone, you have The Life of David Gale, where he was at a party and, the girl framed him for, you know, taking advantage of her and then ultimately stood trial and wrongfully put to death, for that. And then American Beauty. So neither one of those films, were really socially acceptable, I don't think. And
American Beauty was fantastic. I'm just saying.
Oh, I loved both of those films. Don't get me wrong. And I'm actually intrigued enough to watch this one as well.
At least you're honest. Most people would say, no, I have no idea. I plan on watching it. I'm not going to lie. I'll be right there. I'll check it out. This is weird.
Yeah. I'm not ashamed to say, hey, I'm interested in it. But yeah, for him to make this decision with his career when he's already made risky decisions, it just doesn't shock me. It's actually more like Amanda said, I can't believe it got greenlit, but for him to do it, that's not a surprise.
Well, I mean, one way to look at it is it's an Italian production. I don't know if it's going to shoot in Italian. That would be weird since I don't know if he speaks Italian, but I guess we'll find out, right? It's just, I don't know if this is going to necessarily translate as well for him as he thought was possible. On the same token, I also think they probably look at this like, hey, our movie will get instant recognizability. You know, it instantly will resonate with fans. They'll want to see it. It will be almost like a car wreck. I mean, whether it's good or bad, no matter what it is, people will want to see it because it's the first thing Spacey's done since everything. And obviously now there's a little bit of a shock value to it. So I get why both parties would be involved in this because he can get the role. They want him for the role. It'll bring attention to their film. And the filmmakers, which currently have a foreign film, might get American distribution over it. But still, weird.
I would be shocked to see Hollywood. Well, I actually wouldn't be shocked, but I would be annoyed if Hollywood just kind of flipped its script and was like, here's this movie. Like, if it had amazing critical review and success, and then they started promoting it, considering he was one of the first Me Too targets, if you will.
Well, there
targets
is...
Targets isn't the right word, but you know what I mean.
No, I get what you're saying. But there is something to be said. Like, there was a lawsuit against him that was withdrawn. There hasn't been anything technically, to my knowledge, proven officially in court. So, I mean, there is... I don't know. I don't know what the penance is on something like this when you can't... When there's all these what ifs... And a lot of it's hearsay. You know, I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know what the proper answer is. So does he deserve to have a career after this? I am not going to be the person that makes that decision because I don't know. But it feels wrong. But it could be, you know, I don't know how much of that is just what the speculation I've heard without really knowing all of the facts or what. I don't know the answer to that. And I definitely don't want to speculate on something like that for me. But what about better news? I know... Everybody seems to be excited about Hocus Pocus 2. I'm not one of them. Are you guys?
I figured Amanda would be. When I think of Hocus Pocus, I actually associate the movie with her. And I only watched it because she was so excited about it and posting all about it and her costumes that she's worn for Halloween.
Were you disappointed?
It was all right. I think I should have watched it as a child and maybe enjoyed it. That does change your
experience,
it.
I would imagine.
As an adult, I was like, really? I mean, okay, cool. Happy for you guys. The kids liked it.
I think it does start. It's one of those where you grab onto it when you're younger and it just kind of hangs out with you, despite knowing that it doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't make any cinematic moves. It's not anything that will shock you by any means, but it's fun and it's something that, at least for me, I have friends that are even, you know, 15 years older than me that must have seen it when they were younger also, and they engage with it in the same way. And so it's kind of bonded us. But I am nervous. I am definitely nervous because it's been almost 30 years since the movie premiered. I think it came out in 93. So it's turning 28 years old this year. So I'm not sure how the actresses will fare. That's always a concern whenever you have a sequel decades later, right? Mm-hmm. Are they going to hold up? Especially because they haven't done a lot of notable works since then, more recently. I mean, in that time, they surely have, but more recent to now, I haven't seen much. So I am going in cautiously optimistic.
It's hard to recapture magic three decades later. Literally, here.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So what I will say is if I rewatch the original one with the kids and they're excited and I tell them there's another one coming and they want to see it, then I'll go see it in the theater. Or no, this is only streaming, right?
Yeah, this is a Disney Plus, I think, exclusive.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll wait until I don't have to pay $30 to watch it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect. Perfect.
The other news that caught my eye was the story of Willy Wonka. So I loved the book as a child, mm-hmm. and I loved the Gene Wilder version. Did not like the Johnny Depp one. So I'm cautiously excited about the backstory.
Do you want to see that? I mean, I just feel like this is where Hollywood seems to go when they're like, we gotta just milk it. We need a Hannibal prequel of when he was a kid. No, we don't. Why do we need that? Nobody wanted it. And then that's what I get worried about when they go to these origin stories for characters that don't really need the origin. I always get concerned. I do like Chalamet. He's a lovely chap, but I don't know. It feels weird. It feels interesting, but odd that this would be the choice they want to make with this.
So selfishly, I'm hoping it gets the younger ones excited to go read the book.
Good.
You know? So sure. Encouragement there, and have them fall in love with a story that I loved as much as a child. And I'd much rather have an origin story than another remake of the original. I'm so tired of remakes, and I'll take an origin story over a remake.
I'm not sure how I feel about Chalamet in this role. I like him. I think he's talented. It's just one of those where I don't know that he is necessarily the best choice for it. But teenagers will flock to it, and even some adults who have an infatuation for him.
He's a handsome
guy. Can you remind
guy.
Me what he's been in? Because, yeah, he is handsome, but I don't remember what he's been in.
Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, Little Women. He was in Little mm-hmm. Women recently.
Oh, he was in Little Women. That's why I look familiar. Okay.
He's just a younger guy, and he has a very, to me, like, delicate romantic demeanor. Like, I get very soft vibes from him. I don't know that I necessarily.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Does that mean
you think he was one of the Little Women? Is that what you're trying to say? It feels like you're being a little pointed.
No, he doesn't come across as someone with like a boisterous personality that I feel like Willy Wonka has to have. Oh, it has to be something that has energy. Like, I could see Alive. Hugh Jackman in this role, which would be great. But Timothy Chalamet just doesn't strike me as one for a level of comedy and fun and intensity. Whereas, because most of the stuff that he does that he's really good at is like sad drama and despair.
Longing looks into the
longing.
Camera.
Longing, yeah, yeah.
My hair just blew in the wind. Why? There's no wind. There is when I'm around. It's like that.
Sure, sure.
Maybe something sad and deep happened and he went and chased Candy as his reason for happiness. Because he's, from what I can tell, he's just this crazy old man living in a chocolate factory. So maybe something sad
maybe
really
he's
happened.
A creep.
Hey, as a kid who struggled with his weight his whole life, I feel for him. I understand this guy. I have a plight that I can get behind. It really
he doesn't look like somebody who has a chocolate addiction.
Maybe he
Timothy Chalamet.
You know, people have metabolism. Maybe he doesn't have an overindulgence in chocolate obsession. Maybe he just likes the chocolate, you know, and just he knows when, you know what, I can't have anymore. My pants won't fit. It happens.
Maybe.
Yeah. I am interested in this whole James Bond MGM Studios deal where Amazon and MGM are going to be together. I don't ever want to watch a James Bond movie at home first off the bat. I just don't. I have no interest whatsoever in that. I don't know if that's what Amazon would do, or they do like they try to do a day and date or exclusivity window with theaters, and then still, you know. So that's the only thing that worries me. But I think Amazon has always wanted to get in the studio business because they want to be a premier studio. They want to be more than just a streaming network. So this would be a gateway to that.
They want to be more than Prime shipping.
But I just don't need any more than Prime. Like, I would pay just for the Prime shipping.
I know, but we don't subscribe to Prime Video for Prime Video. We subscribe for Prime shipping.
That's what I'm saying.
And in that, we happen to get the streaming service that we don't really use very often.
It's true. Just for psych.
I'm going to argue with you.
I'm going to mute you. What? Sorry, what were you saying? Sorry.
It's okay. Prime Video is one of the first places I go when I want to watch something.
Really?
Yes, ma'am.
Like what?
I'm
going to write these down so I can go watch them.
Well, Miss Maisel.
Nope, I'm not watching that one.
That's a good call, actually. That's a great show.
All right. Let's hear the rest of her list here.
The Expanse.
Nope.
I'm trying to remember what else.
I've heard that's good, though. I've heard Expanse is a great show. Actually, I've heard both of those are great shows.
And originally, I got Amazon Prime, and then we didn't have HBO Max. And I wanted to be able to watch HBO. I wanted to be able to watch Stars. I wanted to be able to watch Cinemax. And I could do all of that through my Amazon Prime just by adding channels. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to have a whole bunch of subscriptions, and I didn't have to have cable. And you'll be surprised the number of movies that you can watch on there with Amazon Prime without having to have all of the other streaming services. So, I mean, they have a pretty wide selection, and the usability of being able to just plug in additional channels and cancel them when you don't want them anymore, it's been nice.
So there's a convenience factor for you, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So let me ask you a question, and this is one as much as I know about movies and TV, this is one thing I just don't know, and I could Google it, but I thought I'd ask you instead. There's a show called Leverage Redemption, which I'm looking forward to because it's like a rebirth of the show Leverage that used to be on TNT, and it's coming to IMDb TV, which I know is accessible through Prime.
Yes, with commercials.
With commercials, so it's free with commercials, you just got to pay extra for no commercials kind of thing, or what?
I don't think you have the option to get it without commercials. The IMDb things, I've only watched, I think, two of them through my Amazon Prime, and both times they had commercials. So if you can tolerate commercials, have at it.
For one show, I can do it. For one show, I can do it.
For that show, I will.
Exactly.
Not for most shows.
It does say that it's a free ad-supported streaming video channel, and it's available on all of these other things, and it's without purchasing a subscription, so they don't offer a paid option.
All right, little, you know, you and your facts. I was hoping she was right. She
was right.
She knew. And you just had to go and verify it. Fact checker.
That's okay.
Nobody likes
I'm
a
supporting
fact checker.
Her thought process. She said
with
she
facts.
Wasn't totally sure, so I just verified. All right. She is absolutely right.
She was. Damn it. All right, well, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Not this information. You can Google that, but the website, podcast, reviews, stuff like that, thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please join our Facebook group. It's a closed group, so you got to look for it, The Hollywood Outsider, and we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Now, I want to mention Patreon real quick. Our show is independently funded, therefore all the expenses are out of our own pockets, and Patreon supporters like Christy help support the show. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to a lot of bonus content in whatever your respective tier is. Now that you understand what it is, if you want to support the show, you just go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. There's a lot of stuff. We have a Patreon specific podcast called Bad Movie Night, where we do a movie every month that some people say is awful, but we like to some degree. We just did Under Siege, and that was fun and interesting at the same time. So check those out if you want
to. That's on my list of things to listen to, because I remember watching that with my mom as a kid. So I'm like, oh, I got to go back and listen to that.
There is a lot of talk about Erica Eleniak's parts.
A debate, actually.
It wasn't a debate. I listened to the last podcast.
There was a debate.
Hang on. I listened to the last podcast, and you explained to Brian and Dr. Stan that there was a debate whether they were real or not. The debate wasn't if they were real or not. The discussion was, I am 100% don't care if they're real. Because technically, if they're under skin, they count. That's all I was saying. That's the major debate. Trying to sell it as something different.
I got to entice the people. But no, really, there was a little bit of a debate. John really felt like they were, or maybe it was you. Somebody felt like they were real.
I think you just felt.
And they're not.
No, I'm just saying they counted.
Did you Google it, Amanda?
They count as real.
Christina, we have our own sets. I can at least speak for myself. I've seen many sets. I know what real ones and what fake ones look like.
I can speak from, but I'm not touching that, but I can do. It's okay. You know what? Let's go
when
to our format outside
to
in topic.
Gravity.
Let's go into our topic. The art of the trailer. So we're going to talk about movie trailers. And, you know, typically this is where movie reviews would be. But like I said, we're saving Army of the Dead for last because we want to talk about some of the spoilers in it after we kind of discuss it without spoilers. So we're saving that to the end just so you don't have to be weird with the show and start it in different spots. Movie trailers. Chris, you kind of talked about it a little bit in terms of why you picked this topic. So what's your stance on trailers in general? Are you a fan of movie trailers? Do you like them, love them, loathe them? Where are you?
I'm in the middle. So I like the trailer teasers, but do try to stay away from the full-length trailers because I've had too many movies spoiled when they make them, what is it, like 2.5 to 3.5 minutes long?
2.5 usually, yep.
At that point, I feel like you're giving too much away. So keep it to that like minute and a half. That's the sweet spot. And those are the ones that I'm more inclined to look forward to.
I'm kind of on board with that. I love the experience of movie trailers or teasers, but if you're going to do a full-length trailer, it's gotten progressively worse, I feel like, over the last, I don't know, handful of years, where it's not so much trying to engage you with, you know, getting you excited or getting you interested. It's them showing way too many cool moments that when they come up, you're like, oh, this is the scene from the trailer. And I can recall it and you recognize the moment and they give you the whole moment. They don't shy away from it. And we'll talk about what makes them really great and really bad. But I think when they do it right, then I absolutely love them. I look forward to them sitting in a movie theater ahead of the movie I'm intending to watch. Like Christina said earlier, you kind of start making a checklist of what you like and what you're looking forward to. And I've gotten to the point where if a movie trailer ruins something that I feel like would be really great to see in the movie, like a moment, then I'm less inclined to watch your movie at all, even if I was previously interested.
I love movie trailers. Like, that used to be my favorite part of the movie until they made them like 45 minutes before the movie started. And then that kind of sucked because now you got people rolling in late and everything else, and it's distracting. And it's like, well, I got plenty of time to pee. Well, I don't want to have plenty of time to pee. I want the movie to start. Unfortunately, I think there's too many of them. But I do love trailers. The thing I don't love right now, and what's been the factor for years, I think, is what you guys already talked about, which is too much information in the movie trailer, spoiling the big moments, telling you the ending a couple times. Like, I've seen the actual endings in movie trailers, and I'm like,
oh,
and then
yeah.
you see the movie, and you're like, what the hell? Like, because the whole trailer, the whole movie, you know you're going to see that scene, and then it's at the end. Oh, you sons of bitches. But it's this thing where you see a movie, and it's the same freaking trailer as every movie. So I'm seeing, like, roughly the same 10 movies over and over and over and over and over, and the movie trailers. And that's annoying to me. I would love it if I saw a bunch of other stuff, but you never see independent trailer movie trailers. You don't see like a ton of like mid-range, smaller budget movie trailers. You only see those online. And in the theater, I feel like all they're showing are the big budget blockbuster Marvel, just, you know, Lord of the Rings-ish, you know, Star Wars, those kinds of films. And I'm not getting anything else for anything with a little bit of a different leaning or arc or genre. And that's what I want. If I'm going to sit there and watch 10 movie trailers, I want 7 of them to be of completely different genres. You know what I mean?
I agree with that. So last night, I think I ended up spending about 3 hours watching movie trailers to prepare for this episode.
Wow.
And I didn't have anything else to do in the kids were in bed. So that's what I did. I watched movie trailers.
This is dedication.
I'm not knocking you. I'm just saying I'm kind of feeling bad that I didn't do that.
Well, no, it's okay. You're on this show all of the time and I'm not. So I didn't want to come on not prepared.
I respect that.
And when I was searching YouTube for, you know, best trailers of, you know, whatever decade or year, you get almost all action trailers as the best trailers. Mm-hmm. And it's the same genre. It's the same style. And you're right. You're not seeing those indie trailers. And, I really appreciate the indie trailers when I'm on the streaming services, because I'll read a synopsis. I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. And I'll watch a trailer and that'll either say, yes, I'm going to click play, or no, I'm not. And that's when I really look forward to watching the trailers when I'm not in the theater, is really for those kind of deal breaker decisions on whether or not, is it one that I'll actually rent, or is it one that I'm just going to wait until it's available in one of the dozens of streaming services I subscribe to at this point.
Oh yeah, where you watch the trailer when you're trying to debate, do I really want to watch that? Or you're scrolling through your Netflix category, your Prime category, and you're like, that looks good, but let me see this trailer. And then you're like, eh, no, that wasn't good enough. It didn't jazz me up enough. Those kinds of decisions, is that what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Or in a theater, obviously. I'm just speaking that there's a lot of movies on streaming now as well.
The other times that I watch trailers when I'm not in the theater is if someone makes a movie recommendation that isn't on my, like, circle of trust, people who know me.
Somebody's throwing a dart. Nah, Christy, I swear you're going to love it. Oh, huh? How do you know that? Just by looking at you, I can tell.
So there's times when I'll listen to the podcast, or, you know, coworkers or people talking about movies online. That, Amanda, you were actually talking about this on last week's episode, where, you know, you'll have people that'll post and you're like, there's no way I'd even like that movie, but now mm-hmm. I need to check it out to see if I should actually watch it. So that's the time that I'll watch the trailers. Otherwise, I'd really try to stay away from watching them unless I'm in the theater. I kind of miss VHS tapes, though, because you were kind of stuck watching them unless you wanted to hit rewind or
ooh,
fast forward
true.
And watch
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And I miss that because, and then the early DVDs where you couldn't skip them either, because then I was forced to see what I didn't have the ability to know had been released, because it was different. We didn't have social media. We didn't have your phone telling you, hey, watch this new thing that just came out. And so there was far more appreciation probably, I don't know, 20 years ago than there is now for trailers.
Well, and I don't think, honestly, a lot of trailers translate well to like a mobile device. I know Eternals just came out today, right? And so I watched it originally on my phone, the new Marvel movie, because of course we're going to have that trailer. It'll be in every movie I see for the next 6 months. But when I looked it on my phone, I was not, I'm still not really that impressed, but it's much better on a TV, a big TV / movie screen, than it is on a mobile device. Like on a mobile device, it just didn't look like anything special at all. And I really think the size of the screen is going to make a difference on some of these too, because they're meant to be seen in a theater to begin with.
So interesting you bring up Eternals, because we had some comments on our thread about, oh, you don't need trailers for blockbuster franchises and all of that. But for like the Marvel spinoffs, for sure, I want a trailer because mm-hmm. I don't want to invest a lot of my life in, I don't know, the best way to make an equivalent is for a bunch of side quests. I like the main stories. And if you're going to give me, you know, WandaVision, or if you're going to give me Eternals, you better make it worth my while. And so, yes, I'm going to watch that trailer. Otherwise, I'm not going to invest my time because I really don't have enough time in my life to sit here and watch every single thing that came from the overarching set of stories.
That's a good point.
I respect that. So many people would just see every Marvel movie, every Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. And I got to be honest, like there's some I'm just not interested in seeing. And I don't think it makes you a bad fan because you don't want to see everything. It's just we have other stuff. There's lots of stuff and things to do. There's lives happening. We finally got our lives back recently.
What? So. We have lives? You're kidding.
Yeah. Well, I think they said we can if you do certain things. I don't know what the rules are. But I'm good, I think. Maybe. So what makes for a bad trailer in your opinion? So you're sitting down, you're watching the movie, and the trailers come up, and you're like, that's a bad trailer. And do you know it when the trailer comes out, or do you only know it when the movie comes out and you see the movie that the trailer led you to?
This is the question I've been waiting for. I know, for the most part, when a trailer is bad, because and that's not always the case, but usually if I get done with the trailer and I'm like, okay, that was something that I didn't want to see. So for example, there was Thor Ragnarok and they gave away the whole Hulk moment, reaction, yeah. Everything. And this is actually one of Nate Bruce's comments in our Facebook group. He said that he loathed them giving too much away and being too long. And that moment in particular seemed to bother him as well.
Destroyed that moment. Completely, like, gave the entirety of that moment away.
Yeah, and it wasn't... And there's a difference between something being a spoiler and something in a trailer spoiling something. And this was something where it wasn't necessarily a spoiler, but it definitely spoiled the moment. And when you give too much away, or I've seen a lot of trailers in the past probably 2 years where I'm getting essentially the entire story from first to third act. And I can tell you everything that's going to happen because you just told me it in the trailer. And I should not be able to figure that much out in 2 minutes. You don't have to tell me everything that happens. A really good trailer doesn't need to do that. A good movie shouldn't have to do that. But on the other hand, sometimes trailers are too good and they end up being bad in that way. For example, a lot of comedy trailers give all of the best comedy moments away in the trailer to entice you, but then that's all there is left of the movie. And so those moments you've already experienced, and it's kind of like, well, that was a drag. And so while the trailer was something great when you first saw it, it ends up becoming a disappointment because you're like, okay, well, I guess that's all there was to this movie. So you, I don't know, you did get me, but like, I didn't want to be got.
So my question for you is, does that mean the trailer was bad or does that mean the movie was bad?
Oh, that is a good point. Probably.
Yeah,
because
the trailer got you. The trailer got you in. So the trailer was good.
That's true.
So my example that I had for that was The Nun. The trailer was good. Oh. Aaron, I know you don't like the Conjuring franchise mostly.
They all sucked outside of the Conjuring movies, in my opinion, but I'm with you. That was a good trailer because that was the best part of that Conjuring movie was The Nun. So that trailer was really creepy, really effective.
It got my butt in the seat. I saw the trailer, told my two bigger kids. I was like, we got to go and see this. We went and saw it as soon as we could. I was so disappointed. Now, my kids and I all have different opinions on whether or not the movie was actually good or not. I didn't like it. I felt like the scariest parts I saw in that trailer, and it was just too slow, and there just wasn't as much going on, and it's my least favorite in the entire Conjuring franchise. But it accomplished what it set out to accomplish. I bought that ticket. We saw it in the theater. There you go.
Yeah.
Christy, what's funny is they do a great job in that, and Warner Brothers really does a great job with constructing trailers and making them fabulous, I think. Because I saw all three Annabelles and I didn't like any of them. But I kept going back because I kept believing this one was going to be better because the trailers were that good. Ah! They get me three times. So really, that's on me, but kudos to their marketing department.
For sure. I liked the middle Annabelle, and the other two just were okay. So, but the one, the origin story where in that house, mm-hmm. like in the middle of nowhere with all the young girls and the mom was in the sick bed, I really did enjoy that one. And the doll just freaks me out completely. So.
Well, back on track. For me, what makes a bad one is giving too much away. I think we can all agree on that, right? That mm-hmm. just figure out how to do it smarter. I mean, there's one that I always kind of reference. And I mean, well, it really goes to being a great one, but I'm going to just talk about it here because this is kind of how you make a trailer without giving everything away. As if you guys ever see the trailer for Cloverfield?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the movie I'm not a fan of. I don't really like the movie. It's fine. Like, I don't dislike it. It's fine. But the trailer doesn't show you the monster at any point. It just gives you the illusion of there being a monster and everything that is going on. And even does this like Escape from New York total homage where the Statue of Liberty head rolls down the street. It's a fantastic trailer. And I know we're talking about bad ones, but I'm just trying to show you can do it where you don't give away the best moments because the monster is the best moments of that movie. But the trailer doesn't give any of that away. You have no idea what that thing looks like and you still want to see it. It got my ass in a seat where I feel like too often studios think if they tell you everything and give you the sexiest moments that are available, that's what's going to get you in a seat. And that isn't always what works for me. I actually want to show up and get more than what I bargained for, not exactly what I bargained for.
You know what I've found to be my favorite type of trailer is the ones that typically make very little sense. Like, I'm not really extracting a lot of story points from it, but I see moments that look cool. There's a cool shot here, or there's a funny line here, and there's just this snippet with a great soundtrack and or music or score or something. And the compilation is less about the story. I mean, you have an idea of it, but you don't, all you need is the base. And then they just cut together different moments that look cool, especially for an action trailer. I don't need to see all of this stuff. I mean, Fast and Furious is a great one. Sometimes they go too far, but when they just cut all of those fast moments where the car's doing this and then they're doing that and then they're shooting at this, you have no idea what the context is of those moments, which is exactly what I want. I don't want to know why they're doing what they're doing, what the motive or intent is, or the outcome. I just want to see the initial happening that gets me excited. And same with horror movies. You brought up The Nun, and I think that was, if I can recall the trailer right, that was one where it shook everybody in the theater. When she
freaky.
Popped up.
Yeah, she
popped up. Because it was super creepy.
Yeah.
But you had no real context about what was happening. And every time it kept popping up, you'd get freaked out by it. And that was what was exciting about it. So there's definitely a way to build tension and thrill and scare in your audiences without telling them what's going to happen. And that's the biggest thing that some of these marketing developers, I don't know if that's the right title for whoever's creating these trailers, but that they're missing. And they're just going to, this is a really good 30-second scene. We'll just throw the whole scene in here? What? No.
So last night, I was looking at trailers for movies that I absolutely loved to see if I still would like the trailer and if it spoiled everything. And one of the movies that stood out, and I don't even remember now if I saw the trailer before I watched the movie. I don't think I did. Which I'm glad, because it would have ruined it for me. But it was The Departed. I love that movie so much. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen it. But when I watched the trailer last night, I would put this in the bad trailer category. Because going back and watching it after watching the movie, I was like, wow, I almost got every memorable moment. Even though I couldn't necessarily maybe put every single detail together why it was like impactful, but well, I hope everyone's seen it at this point, but it even shows Martin Sheen's body falling off the building. And I remember the first time I watched that movie, I was like, holy crap, I can't believe that happened. And had I seen the trailer, I don't know if I would have been as blown away by that experience as I was the first time I watched it. I don't think I'd love that movie as much as I do today.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's what I think sometimes studios miss. You know, I'm a big proponent of surprises. If you have a surprise in a movie, the movie doesn't work unless it would work no matter if you were surprised or not, right? I'm a big fan of that argument. So if you have a big reveal and the reveal is still dumb, it's not going to matter because the movie's still going to suck. But if it's a big surprise plus it works in the context of the movie, it's going to work on rewatches and whatnot. On the same token, I really feel strongly that in terms of a surprise, if you do get that big surprise, the memory, the muscle memory will stay with you. So if it's genuinely not spoiled for you the first time you watch the movie and you get that surprise, like every time you watch it, you'll still get a little bit, a tinge of that excitement because of that muscle memory the first time you saw it. It reminds you of the first time you saw it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I find it very important to just keep those big surprises at bay. And there's no reason to ruin your frickin' movie by showing all your cards. You know, you can't play poker if you show your hand. You just can't win. You know what I mean? It's the same concept. Yeah, that's a cool analogy. I'm going to write that down. All right. Okay, now we know.
You could still win if you were dealt four aces. I'm just saying.
All right. Somebody's always got to ruin everything. So now we know what ruins a trailer and an analogy. What makes for a great one? What makes for a great trailer?
Well, I think we've talked a lot about it so far. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to establish the atmosphere of the movie. So if you have a unique cinematic style for the movie, capture that in the trailer. As long as you don't think it's going to be a turnoff. If it's too unique, people might not want to. But now I watch too many. But I saw a few last night where the films were just a bit different with how they shot it, like Rock and Rolla.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have the trailer that aligns with the style of how they're filming it, it makes sense. It helps you set the expectation of what you're going to be watching when you go see it in the theater. I do like it when they establish who the main character of the movie is and slightly what their plight is about. So the first one that comes to mind for me is The Wolf of Wall Street. So I knew nothing about the story or who this man was or all the controversy around him. Mm-hmm. And when I watched that trailer the first time, I knew I wanted to watch it. I knew I couldn't watch it with my children, but I knew that I wanted to watch it. And, you know, it had a good soundtrack, which was my next point. And it established who this character is. And it was like Amanda said, there's a whole bunch of, it was a montage of a whole bunch of different scenes from the movie, but you didn't really make sense of what the heck was going on. Just that you knew you wanted to see what all the madness was about. And then, I'm a pretty emotional person. So, when, like, I watched the trailer for A Dog's Journey, I never did end up getting back to go watch it just because I had too many other movies I wanted to see that year. But I cried. I remember crying. And yeah. It was that memorable, to stick with me that I would still say that they pulled it off well.
I like what you were talking about, basically, like, creating a mood. That's an interesting way, because I remember Pulp Fiction's original trailer had Majelou, however you say that. I think it was Dick and Jane, the song, you know, the whole song from Pulp Fiction. That played over the trailer amidst little bits of conversation that created an entire mood for that movie. And at that point, nobody had any idea what this kind of style or vision or who Tarantino was or anything else. So it looked like the weirdest thing you've ever seen. But because they did that, a semblance of mood, that creating its own specific atmosphere, it made everybody that saw that trailer go, I gotta see what the this is, you know? And it's too rare that trailers like that are made anymore.
Well, I feel like Tarantino and Guy Ritchie are two prime examples of that, going back to Christie's original first point. Because when I think of a unique directing style, and I think about a trailer that equally represents that uniqueness without deterring the audience who may not naturally gravitate towards it, Those are the two that I instinctively think of. Guy Ritchie has a very, his is a little bit different than Tarantino, where Tarantino focuses a lot about on the script and the screenplay, and Guy Ritchie focuses a lot about what you see on the screen. But I get that from both of their trailers, and then I get that during the movie. And so it's almost like a brand of the director themselves.
So let's discuss the most rewarding trailers you can remember and why they connected with you. Round, we'll just go around.
My first one is my favorite.
Okay.
And that is the Scream trailer. It's become iconic, and that initial moment that you see in the trailer of Drew Barrymore answering the phone and he asks, "What's your favorite scary movie?" I mean, that just set the stage for the entire film, for the entire franchise. And it's still the scene in the movie, one of them, but it's definitely one of the most impactful in the film still somehow, because you don't have all of the context, but you have the underlying creep factor built into it.
I remember the trailer. I haven't seen the movie.
I'm sorry, what? What?
I remember the trailer, but I haven't seen the movie. There you go.
Christy.
Well, that's just disappointing.
That's on your list.
I was a very busy teenager.
Do you have eight hours that are free? Because we got time. We'll sit down and watch all four Screams with you before the fifth one comes out, so you're ready to go.
Oh my God, I absolutely will.
Okay. And I also owe Amanda, Fast 4 and Beyond. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Scream is the first one. I want to know if anybody saw Phantom Menace, the trailer, when it first came out. That's one that I would throw on my list because it's very much, I remember when it came out and we hadn't had Star Wars in many a decade. This was the resurgence of Star Wars. And even though the movie definitely did not live up to the hype of the trailer for me personally, and I think for many, the trailer itself brought back every single ounce of nostalgia and goodwill and just love for the property that I think was available. Like, it's probably one of my favorite Star Wars memories, and it wasn't even one of the Star Wars movies. It was just a trailer. It was just seeing that in a theater with my friends and family and stuff, and just seeing everybody just lose it in a theater because, holy shit, we're getting another Star Wars movie. We hadn't seen it, and Darth Maul looks so badass, and he's like, why does he look like a checkerboard? Who cares? It's badass. Why does he got horns? Who cares? It's badass. Why is there so much mist and fog, and is that Jar Jar? We don't know who that is yet, but we know we're going to hate him later.
Don't judge him.
Yeah. It's one of the best trailers, I think, of all time. I know it's one of the most, at the time, it was like the most viewed of all time, but it's just one of those that even though the movie does not live up to that hype, I'll always be grateful for the memory that it gave me because it really brought back my love for Star Wars, which had died by that point. Like, I was just over Star Wars, had no interest. So that's one that I would say really stands out for me. Christy?
One of them that stands out to me that was more recent was Alita Battle Angel. So the first time I watched it, I got goosebumps because I was really excited that it was just kind of something new. I didn't know that it was actually based on anything, but just seeing, humanity and technology being combined together with a strong female character, it just pulled me in. And I just knew that I had to see it. So when I was thinking about this, I was trying to think, what are the trailers recently that made me watch and wait for that movie to come out? And that was one of the top on my list.
That's good. That's a really good movie, too. I mean, I don't think it gets much love these days, but it was one where I wanted a sequel for it.
I really wish they would have made a sequel. I was really disappointed when they didn't make one.
Me, too. I really enjoyed it. So my next one is one that I think set the stage for James Gunn in general as a filmmaker and also the tone for the movies that went beyond that and the entire film itself, which is Guardians of the Galaxy. The soundtrack, the intro, and honestly, both Volume 1 and Volume 2, they were just so unique and fun and lively, and they played on the characters without playing too much on the story of the film. And you just, it's really hard to beat a trailer that gets you invigorated for the film because of the soundtrack that it uses. It's anytime someone uses music that I'm inclined to dance to or move to or sing to or anything like that, or even just nod my head to the music, I'm invested.
That's the Bunch of A-Holes trailer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's pretty good. Slither's a really good trailer, too, speaking of James Gunn. That's a fun trailer.
I don't think I've seen the trailer for that one.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. Very much a throwback to old trailers. But, yeah, Guardians, that was a hard movie to sell, too. And it really, really worked. I mean, it got people really jazzed and created a mood, like Christy was talking about. It really created a mood and an energy and a very specific kind of family and film and tone, which was hard to sell in one trailer, and they managed to do it.
The next trailer I want to mention is the trailer for Yesterday.
Oh,
so
that's a great movie.
One.
Yeah.
It was an amazing movie, and this is yet another one that it got me amped. I was like, wait, the world forgot who the Beatles were? Okay, I have to see how they're even going to pull this off, right? And I watched the trailer again before we started recording this evening, and again, they didn't spoil it. You know, you had to see it and figure out, you know, and it was so much more magical watching it, but the magic was in the trailer and they didn't give it all away. And so,
no, they didn't. Yeah.
I just remember being really excited and then texting Dominic as soon as I was out of the theater saying, "Hey dude, I just saw this trailer and we absolutely have to go and see this because he loves the Beatles." So, I think that's another thing that I love about watching the trailers, by the way, is when I watch a trailer and it makes me think, oh, I have to watch this movie with this person. They're going to love it. Or this is going to be a great experience to share together. Yeah, that was one of them.
I liked that the trailer blended multiple Beatles songs based on like the moment in the movie. So you got glimpses of it from this point where he's performing, you know, Come Together, and then it's just going to move through and Hey Jude, and it gives you a little bit of the song here and there, but not like a full performance. And that was really fun because it felt like you really understood how important the Beatles are to this character.
Mm-hmm.
It was a magical trailer and movie.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Very unique.
Yeah, more people should see that. Speaking of unique, Spider-Man. Oh, I'm just kidding. There's like 14 of
Which
them.
Which one?
Well,
pre-Uncle Ben or post-Uncle Ben?
This one required Uncle Ben because he's a very important part of Spider-Man's story, unlike the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which forgets that he exists. It's a whole thing we don't need to get into. But there was the original teaser trailer was pulled because... Oh, well, I'll explain why in a second, but the original one, this teaser trailer, it had this slick bank robbery that happens, and then they escape in a helicopter, but then all of a sudden the helicopter is snagged by webbing, pulled back, and then you see that the helicopter is now stuck in this huge spider web between the Twin Towers, you know, the World Trade Center. So, and then the camera just pulls back, and then you cut to Spider-Man zipping around New York, and... You know, you really have to understand, like, as a lifelong Spider-Man fan, I had never seen this before. I had never seen Spider-Man zipping through the city live. I mean, I've seen the cartoon, I've seen comics. I grew up reading the comics. And Nicholas Hammond in the 70s, which all he did was walk, you know, horizontal, and they just turned the camera vertical. But I'd never seen an actual shot of where it looked like Spider-Man was zipping around the city. And here it was in this freaking teaser trailer. Sadly, obviously 9/11 happened, so they had to pull that trailer and you never saw it anywhere else again. You can find it on YouTube now. But I got so psyched from that trailer. So jazzed to finally see my entire childhood coming to the screen. And Sam Raimi, one of my favorite directors, is doing it. And then, wow, I got this freaking helicopter in the web, and kept waiting for that scene to be in the movie, which I believe was originally supposed to be in the movie, but obviously for obvious reasons that didn't happen. But it's a great teaser trailer. You can go find it on YouTube. Seriously, it's just great, especially for the time, to get you psyched to see Spider-Man for the first time ever.
Can I mention how annoyed I get when a trailer has a moment that the film doesn't, especially if it's like a funny or really cool moment?
Oh, yeah.
And then the movie happens and I'm like, wait a second. half the reason I even came to see this is not even in here. Like, they just didn't include it. It got, you know, pulled onto the scrap floor.
And the studio heads don't care because they're back there like Scrooge McDuck just counting your money like, got it. Got it.
That's part of why, well, one of many reasons why I wouldn't watch any of the trailers for any of the Avengers movies. When didn't I win Endgame from you?
I think so, yeah.
I think so. And when you were like, I hope you enjoy it, I'm like, yeah, I don't know anything about it. You're like, wait, what? I seriously tried to go as dark as I possibly could because I didn't want it spoiled. And I just didn't want a chance of seeing someone in the trailer that didn't end up making it into the movie and being really disappointed.
Mm. Yeah, that must have been one hell of an experience to go into that without any knowledge or...
I don't know how
trailer experience.
God bless America. The fact that you could dodge the internet and everything else and still, like, I could see not getting spoiled because I wasn't spoiled on the big moments either. But there's so much out there. Like, how do you avoid it all?
Scroll fast.
All right. Scroll fast. Got it. Locked and loaded. Amanda, any other trailers you want to mention?
I have a number left. So my next one is, the sequel is actually coming out this week, which depends on when you listen to it. It might not even be that week anymore. A Quiet Place. I was shocked at how well they pulled the trailer off, no less how well they pulled the movie off. But watching that trailer in theaters, and they build that tension of silence when you're watching it and then, you know, somebody steps on a leaf or something and then the trailer kind of moves to the next moment where it's like tension and now there's like faster paced music and they're running and things like that. And I just thought, man, this is going to be brilliant. Like, this is going to be a really smart movie if they pull it off. And I was not disappointed in what I was given. I somehow, even though I was incredibly impressed by what I saw in the trailer, was more impressed by the film itself, which is really, really rare where I'm impressed by one and still the movie surpasses that.
So A Quiet Place has a special place in my heart. I don't think I saw this trailer in the theater. I think I saw it at home. And I'm pretty sure one of the deaf and hard of hearing support groups that I'm in on Facebook is where I found out about the movie. And you should have seen those community groups just explode. Oh my goodness, there's a girl signing in a movie, and it's a blockbuster movie. Mm. Additionally, it was during the time that we were going through the first cochlear implant process for my son. So... he was stoked about it. I was like, Edmund, you gotta watch this. Look, there's a movie. There's a little girl. She's signing. Look, she's just like you. And so during one of our visits to Chicago, where we had to go see the doctor right before a surgery, the movie was released. And so we went to one of the fancier AMCs with a recliner chair, had dinner, you know, the snacks all brought to us in our seats. He just was blown away by this experience. He'd never had one like that before. And so, The trailer brought all of that special moment that will always be in our memories, all to be able to happen.
That's a really cool memory that you have attached to it.
And we're going through the second cochlear implant surgery, same ear, unfortunately, but we're going through it again, and the movie's coming out this week, so...
Are they timing these releases to your surgeries?
Right?
Apparently, but it just works so well, so I'm so excited. I can't wait for him to see this movie.
Like Krasinski's just sitting around, we're going to delay this till next year. Hang on, I think the surgery's going to happen next year. Guys, just wait it out. So she has this beautiful story to tell, and she can refer to Jen Krasinski. Christina, do you have another one?
So have you seen the movie Side Effects?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was one of those...
I don't remember the trailer at all, though.
The trailer is why I ended up watching it. It was a date night at home with my ex-husband now.
So that movie didn't go well, huh?
No, the movie was fantastic. It has no indication how that all went down. But it was another one of those moments where I rented the movie. So I spent money for the date night because I watched the trailer. And it just, I love psychological thrillers. They're probably one of my favorite movie genres. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that combined with the talking about mental illness, it was fascinating, and I just had to watch it.
I don't remember the trailer either, but I remember being excited to see the movie, and I, as terrible as my memory is, can somehow go back like 8 years and remember going to see it in my theater experience.
Is it that old?
It came out in 2013.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they did a good job of placing the actors who were real well known at the time in that trailer to balance out, because Channing Tatum was in that film. Mm-hmm. And every time I think of Channing Tatum, I don't think of, oh my gosh, this is a really skilled actor, and that's probably unfair to him. But
you're
the
not
first things that pop into my
either.
Yeah, yeah. So when they had Jude Law show up in the film, who I have a lot of regard for, that was another thing that saved it. I'm like, well, how can Channing Tatum pull off this pretty serious film? But when I saw this, you know, the additional cast members, it was like, okay, no, I got to see it.
Speaking of Channing Tatum, I've always loved that Hateful Eight left him completely out of the trailer. So you had no idea he was even in the movie. And it's a hell of a surprise when you finally see him. You know,
which movie?
The Hateful Eight.
Oh, I don't
I've
know
seen
if
this
I've heard of that
movie
one.
A number of times, and I don't remember him at
See?
All.
See, there you go. Channing Tatum is definitely in the movie, and he's a very crucial part of that movie. And his appearance is rather sudden and out of nowhere. So if you would have known going in, there's no surprise because you're looking for him the whole time, but they left him completely out of the trailer.
See, Thank that's God. Smart.
Mm-hmm. One that I freaking love. This is probably one of my favorite trailers ever. And I swear it's not just because we're going to talk about Army of the Dead later. And it happens to be a Zack Snyder movie. But the Watchmen trailer had Smashing Pumpkins, The Beginning is the End is the Beginning.
Mm.
And had this visual look from the movie itself, which I really hadn't seen done before in that manner. Especially where it was bringing comic book pages to life, you know, like he does. And, you know, I mean, 300, you could put that trailer in here as well. There's just something about his movies that I think lend themselves well to trailers. But that Watchmen trailer specifically just absolutely sold me. It was a mixture of the visual style and the song, and that combination just created like an entire world of excitement. And you get Rorschach saying, you know, and the world said, save us. And I reply, no. And it hits every note you need to want to see that world, in my opinion. You know, whether you like the movie or not, that's on you. But the trailer itself was one of my favorite trailers of all time, because I couldn't remember being more stoked, other than probably Phantom Menace, honestly, at the time. There wasn't much that I've been more stoked for than that Watchmen trailer.
And they blurred out the blue man's part pretty well in the trailer,
yeah.
Unlike the movie.
There's no blue dong in the trailer. There's no. You'd need 3D for that puppy. You know, they just didn't have the... They didn't have the technical prowess for that.
Oh, you notice it in the movie itself, but somehow in the trailer, they are really smart about the angle that they use.
Oh, and I meant to mention, when you were talking about teasers and how you liked the teasers earlier, Christy,
mm-hmm.
It popped in my head, and then I forgot to come back to it. But originally, there was an Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and which is obviously one of my favorite movies. I've talked about it more than enough. But they had a teaser trailer when I was a kid. They never showed anything from the freaking movie in it. It's just like this plane flying around and the narrator rattling off literally the names and filming locations. That's all it was.
How obscure.
It really was. So and then it ends with Harrison Ford in his indie hat saying, trust me, that's the whole trailer. And I literally pissed myself, I think, as a kid when that first came out. I'm like, I was so stoked. And it shows you nothing. And it's so kind of pretentious because it's like Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and Harrison Ford. They're filming in Hong Kong. They're filming in all of this place. Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom. Trust me, that's the trailer. And I was pissing myself with excitement. I don't know why, but I was. That trailer would bore the shit out of everybody today. But for whatever reason, back in 1983, because it was before 1984, that got me so stoked. So absolutely stoked.
another trailer similar to that for a movie that you and I both don't like is the trailer for The Shining. It just had text on the screen.
Yeah.
And it didn't really show you anything except the red door, if I remember correctly. I hate the movie, but it just, it's interesting to me.
Good trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jaws, the original, go watch the original trailer. It's just, doo-dum, doo-dum. It's just the score. And then the ominous narrator that was the movie trailer guy for every movie trailer up until like 92 or something. Just saying, hey, there's something's happening in Amityville. People are getting eaten or whatever, and it's very, very mild and obscure. You don't see anything, and it's still a really terrifying show. Alien, I think Jennifer Miller in her Facebook group mentioned Alien. Alien, I don't think, has any dialogue at all. And if you go watch that trailer, it's terrifying, kind of, because it really does sets the mood completely for what you're about to watch. It can be done, studios, is what we're saying. It can be done.
Independence Day had a good trailer, didn't they?
Yes. Independence Day hit that sweet spot because it was totally ripping off V, which is one of my favorite TV miniseries. Not series, the series sucked, but the miniseries were great. And it had the discs flying over the different cities, and it's like, well, what's going to happen? Then the White House blew up. Freaking amazing. We're like, wow, you just blew up the White House. This is going to get legit.
You bring up a question, though, that I'm curious about, because you mentioned with the Jaws, I think it was, trailer, mm-hmm. where there's narration, and there's not a lot of narration in theater trailers anymore, movie trailers in general. It used to be, coming to a theater near you, and the whole time they would narrate the whole thing, and now it's just moments from the film and a score and going back and forth between that. Do you guys miss there being like a really proper narrator?
I don't know. When I think about it, it was what the in the 90s you had, it was the same guy's voice. So Aaron, I think maybe if it was a different guy when you were talking about, there was another guy that was really well known for all the movie trailers, right?
Yeah.
And in the movie The Holiday, every time that she was thinking about something, the narrator would pop in and narrate her life. And so I don't know, it's that era of trailers, and I'm not sure if I miss it or not. I think it was like overplayed at the time, but if they did it here and there now, it probably wouldn't be bad.
I feel like I thought it was probably cheesy at the time, and if you go back and watch them now, I'm sure they're going to come across pretty cheesy. But if I have to pick between a narrator and all you see visually is the water moving, and you hear the Jaws theme song and hear narrator saying Amityville, holy shit, look out people, and then to cut to what the Jaws trailer would be today, which is the shark on the freaking boat eating Quint, I'll take the narrator every day.
Absolutely.
I would much rather have the surprise for me personally.
Yeah, they were much more clever about trailers some time ago. And I don't know what changed, because you would think that they would be more clever considering there's been a decline in theater attendance. So you'd think that they would try to do different things to get them enticed and bringing them in.
Well, I think are by giving more of the movie away. Like they feel like that's what they got to do to bring people in. I don't think they're right, but I think that's what they
think. I was going to say, but if you listen to audiences, they get frustrated with that. And even people who show up in the middle of the trailers, they're obviously not invested in the trailers that are happening before their prime movie anyway. So it just feels like they're doing it with no real justification anymore.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to quote Kyle Nolan from our Facebook group. My perfect movie trailer would be a blank screen with the film's title and release date, no scenes or plot description. Okay, that part, a little ridiculous, but I get what you're saying, like the less, the better. And I think most people would agree with that. So I don't know why studios don't see that as more reasonable to go and have a little bit less of the movie in the movie trailer and just give us more of a reason to see it, to want to see it for ourselves, to experience.
For the blockbusters, perhaps they can't sell as much merchandise leading up to the release of the movie if they don't. If they feel like they can't show like the certain character that's going to be in there that they want to really make a lot of money off of.
That's a good possibility. Consumerism and capitalism ruling everything.
Well, any other trailers before we wrap this topic up?
I have five more. So.
Oh, dear God, woman.
The last trailer I want to mention that I got really excited about was The Commuter. Because that was a daddy-daughter movie. And so when my dad is in town, I'm always keeping my eye out on what's a good movie that the two of us could share together that I might not necessarily want to watch with someone else, right? I want that to be a unique experience that I'm going to have with him. The Commuter ended up disappointing me a little bit, but the trailer got me so excited. I couldn't wait to take my dad to that. So that's the last trailer that I remember for him, because we typically watch like the crime movies, and like Bad Boys for Life and those types of like action, but, different than like the action that I watch with the kids. Those are more of the Marvel or the DCs, stuff like that. And it was just interesting when, cause it posed the question, like, would you do it? I'm pretty sure it was in the trailer itself. It made you start to think, like, would you actually do something for a large sum of money? But they did it in such a way that was unique to that movie and not, you know, done over and over again.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a good trailer. I do remember that. Movie was still decent, too, but the trailer really did convey what you're saying. So I get what you're saying. Yeah.
The movie pacing just, they didn't nail the end of the movie, was my only complaint with it. It was good, but it wasn't great.
All right. Amanda, can you get through these quickly?
I will. So the next one is Kill Bill. We talked about Tarantino and how great those trailers are. Kill Bill was one that just is, I mean, it's insane, but it doesn't even get close to the insanity of the actual film, the entirety of the film. And I just thought it was fantastic. And of course, he's always got a great soundtrack to pair. So it was wonderful for that. Another one is Deadpool. I mean,
oh, man,
how do you argue with that one? That one was incredible.
Deadpool had some of the best trailer/marketing of all time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Their entire marketing plan in general was fantastic.
Ryan Reynolds should get a special award for that. I think he did, actually. I think he won some kind of advertising award.
Did he?
Yeah. It's just hilarious. Magical. The stuff that they kept doing on social media all the way up to the release. Like,
Yeah.
I hope he got 50% of the cut from that movie.
It was brilliant. Another one is A Star is Born. I remember watching the trailer, and every single time that Lady Gaga would begin singing, I would get chills on my arms. I would have goosebumps and everything. So it was just insane to experience that multiple times over and over watching the trailer. And then my last two are horror-related. They didn't live up to the film's potential based on the trailer, but the trailers were so good that I was like, I cannot miss this. And the first one is Hereditary. I just thought this is going to be brilliant. This is going to be amazing. And quite honestly, I thought it was a fantastic film until the last like 3 minutes. And then the second one is Us. I just thought it was so unique and clever. And the way the trailer was done was just really exciting.
I'm really disappointed you didn't mention The Dark Knight, because that was a pretty fantastic trailer.
That is a really good trailer.
It gives that hint of the Joker without really showing you what he did in that movie. Yeah. I mean, you really just get a taste, and it really gets you psyched to see what the hell is Heath Ledger doing. What is he about ready really to do with his role?
You're right.
Yeah, that trailer was memorable. I remember being really excited for that movie to come out, even before he passed away.
I really think that trailer is what elevated, because I mean, the first Batman Begins, I think, made like $200 million in the U.S. and then Dark Knight made $500 million in the U.S. Like, it took such a leap forward. It almost more than doubled the previous movie. And I think a lot of that has to do with, yes, the first movie was well received, but just Heath Ledger. And the marketing was so good around his reinvention of the Joker and making the Joker a terrifying character. I think that's really what led to the huge box office that came with that movie. Any further listener comments you guys want to mention before we move out? Here, I've got one I want to read from Joel Wasinger. I love it when a trailer manages to convey a sense of the movie's story or importance. There are many ways to do that, and the best trailers find new ways. I also just love when a trailer creates a compelling story of its own. I enjoy trailers as their own form of ephemeral art. I say ephemeral because I can't off the top of my head give you any examples, and I do think they're a little like a mandala. The thing I loathe most is when a movie trailer, which might be good in and of itself, includes all of the best parts of what ends up being an otherwise shitty movie. The absolute worst is when you can tell that's what they're doing because the clips are haphazardly strung together and the trailer is only sort of good in a clipped way. But it's also horrible to sit through a 90-minute or a 3-hour movie and realize you enjoy the trailer more. Ouch. That's true. It's so true.
So Joel did a really good job summarizing some of the other comments that were on the feed. So I don't want to like not give them justice, but at the same time, that's pretty much the theme of the rest of the comments. I will say that Jessica Farrell commented, shit, I love movie trailers. Could literally watch them all day. Mad Max Fury Road was a great trailer. The new Dune trailer is amazing with the Pink Floyd song. I also submit Thor Ragnarok as a great trailer.
I'm disagreeing with that one.
It could have been good if it didn't give it all away.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if the movie had included more, I guess that's my argument for that is, okay, yeah, we saw the Hulk show up, but if something else was exciting that didn't get revealed, it could have been okay.
I also want to mention Corey Noyes. He said, I despise the stupid mini trailer before a trailer. Yeah, those suck. I don't know who thought that was a good idea. We're going to tease. Here's a 10-second tease of the teaser trailer that's coming out tomorrow. What? Just release the stupid trailer. I don't need that in my life. It just clogs my feed even more.
I'm not sure I've seen it.
It's basically like a little marker reminding you that the trailer is coming out tomorrow. So they give you like a little 10 seconds of it. And then that's all you get. 10 or 15 seconds of the trailer that's coming out the next day.
That's a very expensive business decision.
They just do it to market. Well, they probably just do a little snippet from the actual trailer. And lastly, Marvin Sewell says, I loathe movie trailers that indicate the movie is actually something different than what it actually is, or shows things that aren't actually in the movie. We talked about the shows thing, but indicates the movie something different than what it actually is. We didn't really touch that too much, but yeah, I really don't think it's right when they advertise a movie to be a certain kind of movie and then you get there and it feels completely different.
So I agree with that comment, but I could not for the life of me remember a trailer that did that. But I know that I've had that experience. I just can't remember one off the top of my head. I know Vanilla Sky opened up light and cheery in the beginning, and if you didn't sit through the full trailer, you wouldn't have seen the twist.
Mm-hmm.
But then should they have shown the twist? I mean, that's a movie where I'm torn on whether or not they should have even done the twist in the trailer itself or let you just go for the first half of the trailer. Because the trailer itself was almost like two trailers in one. You had like the light, cheery beginning of the movie and then the twist in the trailer and then the what the heck moments. And yep. I feel like you could have gone one way or the other, and I feel like they should have picked one way or the other, so then when you were watching it, you would have been more shocked, like, oh, so this is where we're taking this.
And I do think The Fountain had a cool trailer that seemed like it was going to be like a cool sci-fi thriller, and instead we got just an awful movie. Ha! Any chance I get. All right, so moving on, we have some upcoming releases. Amanda, what's the first one coming out?
Well, you can go to theaters or spend $30 to stay at home and watch on Disney Plus Cruella coming May 28th, an all-new live-action feature film about the rebellious early days of one of cinema's most notorious and notoriously fashionable villains, the legendary Cruella de Vil. Cruella, which is set in 1970s London amidst the punk rock revolution, follows a young grifter named Estella, a clever and creative girl determined to make a name for herself with her designs. One day, Estella's flair for fashion catches the eye of the Baroness von Hellman, a fashion legend who is devastatingly chic and terrifyingly hot. But their relationship sets in motion a course of events and revelations that will cause Estella to embrace her wicked side and become the fashionable and revenge-bent Cruella.
Okay.
They put effort into that description. I wasn't going to skip it.
Hey, kudos on the description.
Are you excited to watch it?
No. The marketing is non-existent.
It is.
I feel like they're barely even acknowledging that they have a movie that they're putting out. So to me, that just says, ooh, pump the brakes. Don't spend a fortune on this.
I don't want to pay the $30 for early access, but I am excited when it's not $30 anymore.
Same.
So you're excited for free.
It's not free. I subscribe to the Disney Plus app.
Exactly. You've already paid for your Such access through that.
Whatever. All right. What else we got?
All right. Coming to theaters on May 28th, A Quiet Place 2. Following the deadly events at home, the Abbott family must now face the terrors of the outside world as they continue their fight for survival in silence. Forced to venture into the unknown, they quickly realize that the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats that lurk beyond the sand path.
I bet it's people. Shh.
They're the true monsters.
Don't spoil it. Oh, goodness. We've never seen that before.
And then we have Port Authority coming June 1st to VOD. Kicked out of his home in Pennsylvania, Paul travels to New York City and finds romance with a woman who, unbeknownst to him, is transgender. As they start to learn more about each other, Paul's lies and double life begin to surface. I really hope that this ends up being a good take on trans and not, like, turning this character into a villain based on this description.
Or a victim.
Or victim. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want that either.
All right. Next coming on video on demand, Edge of the World, coming June 4th. The adventures of Sir James Brooke, who defied the British Empire to rule a jungle kingdom in 1840s Borneo, embarked on a lifelong crusade to end piracy, slavery, and headhunting, inspired by Lord Jim and the man who would be king.
Yeah. Call him Captain Buzzkill. He doesn't want pirates. Who doesn't like pirates? Pirates are awesome. Idiots. All right. Is there any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about? Anybody want to mention anything?
I started watching a new show this weekend.
Okay. What's that?
Called Tribes of Europa.
I don't know.
So it's in German. So you have two options on Netflix to either watch it in its original audio, which I prefer, or the dubbed, which just felt uncomfortable to me. The synopsis here is it's the year 2074. In the wake of a mysterious global disaster, war rages between the tribes that have emerged from the wreckage of Europe. Three siblings from the peaceful Origini tribe are separated and forced to forge their own path. And it's interesting to me that it takes this whole rebuilding civilization, but you can still see the relics of our modern day civilization, and I appreciate that, because too often it's like, oh, well, everything's kind of back to the Stone Age and kind of rebuilding, and you don't really see a lot of what was recently left behind, and really 50 years in the future isn't that far from now. It's interesting. I've watched the first two episodes, and I'm going to go back for more.
Okay. Amanda, anything from you?
I have not watched anything incredibly new, but I have started a Game of Thrones rewatch.
Jesus. All right. Well, I think we talked enough about that show.
But hold on. Let me say something. I guess I completely forgot how fast they throw you into the Game of Thrones world in the first episode. Like, I thought what happens in episode one happens far into the middle of the first season. It does not. It drops you into the whole thing. But it's been fun so far, reliving it.
All right. And Christy, was that your weekly streaming recommendation, or do you have something else?
That is my weekly streaming recommendation.
Okay. And what
other streaming than that, I'm watching Will and Grace for the first time beginning to end. So I used to watch it here and
beginning
there.
To end? There's like 300 episodes or something.
Yeah, it's what I watch when I'm trying to fall asleep at night. So not because it puts me to sleep, but that's like my wind down time. And yeah, I'm close to the fourth season now. I started it a few weeks ago.
All right. Well, we've got our game, How Do You Survive? And then we're going to get into Army of the Dead, so we haven't forgot about it. But you can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group. Again, The Hollywood Outsider. We're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our site is TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Please rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. You can find Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This. Me and the Blacklist Exposed, I'm presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. And Christy, where can people find you?
Facebook. You can find me on Facebook. Friend request me. Find me in the group when I make comment. You can friend request me.
Aww.
I'm not really active anywhere else right now.
Okay. And now we're going to move to How Do You Survive? This is our game where we take two random movie scenarios and we have to offer our solution for how we would survive. Now, the first one is you decide to rob a casino in Las Vegas. Sound familiar? Just as a zombie army surrounds the city. Given what you know about Las Vegas, how do you escape the city and survive? And we're going in the order of Christy, me, Amanda. So, Christy, how do you survive?
I don't know much about Las Vegas. Ooh, my first thought was trying to figure out, you know, if I could get through underground. Although, after watching the movie, that might not be as easy. but, yeah, I feel like underground would be my best bet, though, because the zombies wouldn't be down there, hopefully.
Well, now I learned that all I have to do is direct the zombies underground, because that's where Christy is, and I'm going to use that as my diversion tactic. Boom. And then I get to the tram, because they have a tram in Vegas. I'm going to take the tram to the MGM station. From that point, I'm going to sneak over to McCarran International Airport, because it's right across the way. Then I'm going to search out, find a pilot, probably hiding in a lounge somewhere. Force him to fly us out of Vegas. If you can't find that pilot, I'm going to be finding some YouTube videos. I'm going to learn how to fly a freaking plane. And then I'm getting the freak out of Dodge. And if any of my team has a daughter named Kate, she will be handcuffed on site or killed.
Amen to that.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, how do you survive?
Okay, so I don't know if you guys know this. Apparently, in Las Vegas, you can have access to fully automatic guns. Sounds like a recipe for disaster in an otherwise
regular
world.
What do you mean you can have like, they're not just handing them out at the casinos. I've been there many times.
No,
that one.
No, but you can actually go to the gun ranges there and use fully automatic guns, not available throughout every part of the country.
So you're going to raid the gun range.
I am. I'm going to get those because, look, I know I have a decent aim. It's not great, but I'm also not... I'm a little scared when it comes to guns. I get a little bit, close my eyes and like, ugh, just kidding, I cry. So I'm going to grab those because I want to be able to shoot as many of them as I can without having to really pay attention. But I'm also going to grab a super fast and expensive tank because where else can you get one of those than in Las Vegas?
A tank?
Yes.
You can like get one a of tank those, in Las Vegas?
They have like personal military replica tanks. Not like tank, like an SUV tank. I don't know how to explain this. I looked this up.
A Hummer?
Not a Hummer, but it's different. I don't know.
I don't recall tanks running down the Vegas Strip.
This is not the best description, but I found this on the internet. And so I will send you pictures. And they described it as a tank, okay?
Okay, so you've got 6,000 pounds of weapons weighing you down. Now you're trying to find a tank. In Vegas to escape. This is a very elaborate and hopeful plan.
No,
you're
going to be
right
next
to Las Vegas as a military state and not like, you know, the capital of debauchery in America or something.
Yeah. Well, what are the strippers going to do for me? I don't want to throw them under the bus. They are hardworking men and women.
Syphilis will protect you. I don't
know. No, don't be mean. Don't be mean to the sex workers. So I'm going to use my expensive and super fast automobile to run over the zombies and just plow through them to get out of my way. And then also, if I have somebody with me, then they can do the additional shooting for me, front and back, to make sure that nobody is actually crawling onto the vehicle if I need to, like, pause for a second. But I probably won't do that. If you're a civilian and you're not a zombie and you're in the middle of the road, I'm going to be hitting you. I'm really sorry, but, you know, it is what it is.
I would be hitting civilians as well. I would just keep moving forward. It'd be.
If we got to pick a partner, I'd pick Scott Calgaro.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he can shoot.
He can do all the things. He knows how to survive. I'd be like, help me, please. I will do whatever you say.
All right, next one. You are trapped and surrounded by the monsters from A Quiet Place. See, there's another connection. Meaning they find you by sound. You know you can't stay where you are. You have to get to your son 20 miles away. But the only way to escape is by a car, a tractor, a bicycle, or a motorcycle, all the things that make noise. What do you do and how do you survive? Christy?
So I was thinking about this, and a car could possibly work if you put it in neutral, especially if it was a stick, and you'd get it away more quickly than if you had a bicycle, because to be real with you, I'm not in shape, but I'm not sure I could bike 20 miles right now. So I think I'd rather, you know, put it in neutral, preferably a stick, and then push it in neutral, hope for a hill, and then jump in the car and go.
Okay, that's good. That's smart. I would, as an experienced motorcycle rider, I would hop on my motorcycle, hit the gas, because motorcycles are faster and on takeoff than any of those other ones, and are also very fluid and steerable. So you can basically go the same places bicycles can, probably a few places that bicycles can't, and you can go a lot faster if need be. And then, you know, if worse comes to worse, you can do some Dukes of Hazzard shit just to get away. Vroom! Jump that little ravine, whatever you need to do. That's what I would do. Amanda?
Wow. Okay, so
where do you get a tank here is what I want to know. Like, where?
Well, we're not in Vegas, man.
Oh, okay, of course.
First and foremost, I'm just going to say this. To my son, who is 20 miles away, you're dead. I cannot stay quiet long enough for me to get to you and them to not kill me.
Hallelujah. Yeah,
it is the truth. I am here to own it. I'm just not that person.
Amanda,
I'm more than likely.
The guy is, the monster's here, Amanda. Just don't say anything. Oh, she's dead. That's really
quick. I would probably try to talk to him. Sir, okay, let me just talk to you. Let me reason with you. Exactly. More than likely, on my solo journey, I'd probably start talking to myself, thinking out loud, not realizing it because I do this often. I just like say it out loud and then I remember it a little bit better. So I'm not going to survive. But if I do try to do something, I'm only going to survive on a car. I have no idea how to navigate a tractor. I'm a city girl. I don't know how to operate that. I'm just like Christy, I'm not going to be able to get on a bicycle, and I'm not going to die on a motorcycle. I would rather die by the monster. So hopefully I can find another tank.
So stick shift or automatic for your car?
Automatic. I haven't driven a stick shift since I was 16 or 18 or something, and I was not good at it then.
Something
I think we're all going to die.
Yeah.
No way. I'm going to hop on a motorcycle. I can get out of there because I'm not worrying about anybody else. And I can throw my son in the back of the bike.
If there were swarms, though, you'd need something special to make the bike really quiet if you were going to do that. Because motorcycles are not quiet.
No, what if I get a Prius?
They're fast. A Prius?
They're quiet. They're hybrids.
They are not fast. They will be eaten. The car itself would be eaten.
But I will be so quiet, they won't know I'm driving a car because I'm in a Prius.
They won't eat you because they feel sorry for you that you have a Prius. That's what would happen. All right. Well, it's time for Army of the Dead. We're going to review it real quick. We'll do it spoiler-free, but then we're going to jump into spoilers. So, you know, we'll be sure to tell you when that part comes, but that part will come rather quickly. So following a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, a group of mercenaries take the ultimate gamble, venturing into the quarantine zone to pull off the greatest heist ever attempted that wasn't orchestrated by Danny Ocean for $200 million. Retrieve it. And Mr. Tanaka will give them $50 million of it. If they can escape Las Vegas alive before the U.S. deploys a nuclear bomb on the town to just blow it into smithereens. So this is our spoiler-free portion. Like, what were your overall thoughts of Netflix's Army of the Dead, Christy?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it enough to, and don't take this as an insult, when I fell asleep in the middle of it, I woke up the next morning and watched it from where I left off. But it was the second movie that I had watched that night. I was really tired after a long week of work. So it's nothing about the movie itself. It was just, I was tired.
I think that's a great compliment.
When I fall asleep in a movie, I usually just look up what the ending was. This time I was like, no, I'll just watch the rest of it. And I watched it the next morning. So that was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I'm not a zombie movie person. I don't particularly seek them out. I don't enjoy them. I actually had forgotten that I had seen many zombie movies, and I had told Chase, I'm like, hey, we should watch this. I don't think I've seen any zombie movies. And then I went back and was like, oh, wait, I did. They just weren't memorable. So I definitely had my characters that I loved, and then there was some that I hated. The one that I loved was the helicopter girl.
Well, hang on. We'll talk about those in a second. We'll get into specifics here in a second. Amanda, what were your overall thoughts?
Well, I was surprised by Snyder not doing Snyder things. he was a little bit different here. I'm not saying that there's no mark of him here, but...
Yeah, there's still a lot of Zack Snyder. I mean, his song choices are on the nose as ever. As ever. But there's still a lot of Snyder. There's still slow motion
there is. And all the others. It's just a lot of the things that people would typically complain about from his movies are not as noticeably present here.
Right.
So I was actually quite impressed with this. I thought the combination of a heist film and a zombie film was a lot of fun, and it made it really, really exciting. I did not mind the time length of it, which I thought I would, especially with how late I had watched this movie. I think I stayed up till almost like 1:30 or 2 in the morning watching it, which is unreal for me. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. I, too, think that the ending... The last act fell through story-wise pretty terribly, and it really annoyed me, but I still liked the movie.
Yeah, I would say I really enjoyed it. It was a throwback to Dawn of the Dead, which Zack Snyder famously directed as one of his first films, and he did a wonderful job with that. And this is kind of like the logical next step or evolution of the zombie experience through his eyes. So I really dug that. It was fun getting a character thriller. I feel like we got a mix of genres here, which was nice. And just overall, one of the better Netflix originals we've had in a long time, because I don't usually like Netflix movies that much. So it was nice to get one that I was actually pumped up and amped to see, and it lived up to much of the hype. So there you go.
Yeah, I think typically with Netflix movies, they're good. Well, the ones I have actually ended up watching based off a recommendation I've enjoyed, but never been excited to watch one. The thing that drew me in about this movie was you had mentioned on a different episode recently, I don't remember how long now, but it was because the zombies were more intelligent. And I'm like, okay, I have to see this, because it's not just a movie where, you know, they're all just dead and trying to kill you, that there was more to it. And I was intrigued and I wanted to see where they were taking that.
Yeah, and speaking of, we're going to wade into the movie right now, so spoilers will be present here, so you have been warned. And a lot of people, I think, thought this was going to be an all-out action blitz or a horror rampage of sorts, and instead we got a bit of character drama mixed with these options. And Dave Bautista, I mean, he plays like a dad who had to kill his daughter's mother, and he's wrestling with that, and then he was kind of an absentee dad because he wasn't very attentive because he felt horrible for what he did, and so his relationship with his daughter suffered. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I wasn't expecting in a zombie heist movie. So what did you think overall the tone of Army of the Dead?
I was equally surprised that there was actually some depth to the characters. I wasn't expecting that. And like you said, especially towards the end when he realizes that the relationships that he had kind of destroyed by being so absent. It wasn't just the daughter relationship, and I don't know how much spoilery we want to get here.
No, it's free, wide open. If they haven't turned it off by now, it's on them.
Okay. I forgot the girl's name, but the girl that she was like, forever's an awful long time, when he said, I thought I had ruined things forever. I wish I could remember her name. And
Maria.
They get
Maria
that.
Cruz?
Maria, yeah. And when they had the opportunity, and it was like they were going to be able to have a future together because he still loved her and she still loved him. And then, bam, that was that, you know, I expected it, but then I was sort of hopeful that that wasn't going to happen because I sure liked her more than a lot of the other people. Some of the people I was like, oh, good, I'm glad they died. but yeah, I kind of wanted to see that come through. I was really disappointed that the daughter was one of the people that made it. I would have picked Maria a million times over.
Or Chambers. I thought Chambers was great, too. She was the one that, because of Martin, that jackass who had to...
Oh! You know, I was so angry.
Throw the reflector the wrong way just to get her killed. She has she's a stunt woman, and she had, like, the best action sequence, I think, in the whole movie. Like, she just made it out of there. Like, she freaking made it. She did all of that shit and got out of there, and still this guy got her killed. I mean, wow. I loved her after that.
That, I think, was my favorite part of the whole movie, was her navigating through that moment. And I was like, that fucking prick. Sorry.
Ooh, no,
sorry.
It's fine.
Was really, really upset about that. And she was from the beginning, one of the more intriguing characters that you wanted to get to see more. You wanted to see where this was going to go. Yeah, her and the helicopter girl were my two favorite besides Batista, characters in the whole movie.
Yeah, and she is, Samantha Wynn is her name, and she is a stunt person. You know, she's been a stunt actress in a ton of things, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and 300 Rise of an Empire. She doubled for Eva Green and Ming-Na Wen and all of these people. So she's a very accomplished stunt actress and just a fun actress, I thought. I agree with you. That was my favorite scene of the whole movie. And even though it ended not the way I wanted, it was still a freaking awesome scene. I wish more the movie would have had more of that, honestly. I really do.
Agreed. I think if we had some more of that in the last act, because after they opened the vault, then it was kind of like, well, okay, now what? They needed another something like the vault scene or like the scene, where he screwed her over. We needed something to sort of kind of close out that movie on a more exciting moment.
Absolutely. Okay. And just so listeners know, Amanda had to step away for a little bit, but we're going to keep on talking. So I want to ask you about the zombie intelligence factor. So we have intelligent zombies, or at least a class of them here, and they barter, they hunt, and a few of them can even reproduce now in this Zack Snyder world. So what do you think about Zack Snyder's new take on zombies here? I mean, do you feel like this was the evolution we needed to make them feel fresh again, or do you feel like it was a little too far?
No, I think I would watch more movies if zombies were like this. There's just something appealing where you see that, you know, their body's mutated for whatever turned them into a zombie, right? And to see them not just be these walking monsters that are just going to try and eat or kill anything that's walking around, but that they actually had some concept of, okay, here's the basic zombies that we know we can sacrifice no matter what. And, you know, pretty much who cares if they die? But then there was the elites, anyone who was bitten by, you know, the leader. Which I was nervous that the next movie, I'm assuming they're making the next movie, that Batista was going to be the next leader because in his final moments, he was bitten by him. I thought it was fascinating, and I found myself really upset when they beheaded the woman. I realized the zombies were bad guys, but...
But it's kind of cruel, right? It was kind of cruel.
No! It was a horrible thing to do, fine, shoot her in the head like you did everybody else, but why did you kill her like that? It was just awful. It was really upsetting.
And then when you know she's pregnant, I mean, even though it's a zombie, right? They had been acting kind of like tribes, like a tribe. They were just being protective of their area, and they were being a tribe in many respects. So I don't want to say I felt bad for the zombie that was pregnant, but part of me was like, man, I mean, they weren't really bothering you until you did that. So this was completely on Martin and Kate. Martin and Kate are really the two villains here. And if it wasn't for that, I think this move, their circumstances would have worked out very, very, very different.
Absolutely agree there.
Yeah, we're coming back to Kate. You don't get to walk away just yet.
No.
In terms of the actual style of the zombie, I was really excited to see an intelligence factor, somewhat of an emotional factor, and just something different, because I'm just, okay, we've seen them fast, we've seen them slow, we've seen a little, you know, warm bodies, we saw a little bit of some humanity that way, but really this is the first time we've seen the villain style of zombies have some emotional capacity and kind of extend what they can do. They can reproduce and everything else, because they weren't really dead so much as they were infected is one way to look at it, right? But even if they were dead, whatever it is, they can have babies. I think that's great. We're going to start little zombie families. We're going to have little zombie kids walking around, eating little zombie babies all over the place. I think that would be cool. I want to see that world. So it was kind of exciting.
It was exciting. Like I said, I would definitely watch more movies like this, or even if they made video games where they're more intelligent. Because like you said, it was more like they were just infected. They still had some amount of humanity left in them. Mm-hmm. And so it just made it kind of more real, more relatable. Like if we were to be affected by a different type of virus than the one that won't be named, you know, I could just kind of imagine in my head that we'd have varying degrees of intelligence that you still had after you've mutated into this thing. So it was intriguing.
Now, we're going to talk about the characters. And you mentioned that your favorite character was played by Tig Notaro, right? The
yes.
helicopter pilot. Which,
and then we saw the article drop this weekend.
Yeah, which is that Tig actually took the spot of Chris D'Elia, who was a comedian who was accused of sexual predator issues. So less said about him, the better. But because of that, Chris was replaced by Tig in all of the scenes. So all the scenes that you see Tig, the helicopter pilot, in, you know, whenever you see that, that is not actually something that was shot together. So Peters, who is the helicopter pilot, was not actually there with Dave Bautista or anyone else. All that was digitally included, and actually cost them an extra couple million bucks because they had to do all of this. Now, did that stand out to you at all? Did you even notice?
No, it blew me away when I read the article that she didn't live, film with the rest of the crew, and that they just digitally implanted it in. I just was amazed. They did such a good job. We've seen other films maybe not necessarily pull it off as well. So I couldn't believe that the one person that I was really, you know, really in love with their character wasn't even supposed to be there in the first place.
Which is awesome. That's just awesome. So why her? Why Peters?
I don't know. There was something about her, this like badass woman who just was just take charge. Okay, what do you need done? All right, I'm on it. And just gonna do it. And then when the helicopter took a shit and she repaired it, like, I don't know, the whole thing, everything about her just made me love her.
I loved her character too. I thought she was a lot of fun. And I...
Oh, are you back? Why don't you announce your presence? We're just like halfway through and now you're back.
But I loved Tig's character. I thought she was really funny, and she was like what Tom Cruise should be for me. And she even kind of was a better looking version of him. And I
No.
Mm-mm. For me, yes.
Tom Cruise, of all the people to call out, Tom Cruise?
I don't like Tom Cruise.
Well, you might not like him, but prettier than Tig. Yes, he is.
No, I did know that. But Sorry. Yeah.
Anyhow, I thought she was fun, but there were almost no moments where you could not tell that she was not originally part of the filming.
There were almost no moments that you could tell that she wasn't a part of the original
I don't know.
Filming?
Did I word this terribly?
It was a double negative. You couldn't tell.
I could not tell, except for there's one scene where there's a little bit of lighting off, but other than that, you really don't notice. And I feel like she had almost like a glow effect in some parts.
I feel like he exaggerated the shots in several scenes just for her, just to kind of blend it in a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was just trying to blend it in. Yeah.
Sorry, Aaron.
I was just going to say, like, she didn't impress me that much. I thought she was fine, but she didn't really knock my socks off. I really love Lily, who's the coyote. You know, I just thought that character was really kind of cool because she has layers, and I felt like there's a little bit of depth there. You know, we already talked about Chambers and how cool she was. Mm-hmm. And then Dave Bautista really impressed me as Scott Ward. You know, he didn't blow me away. Like, I don't think, oh, wow, the chops on Dave Bautista. He's going to win an Oscar someday. But he did show me that there's more to him than just the big ox character that he's normally known for playing. And if you saw My Spy, he's got some comedic chops, too. So it's good to see him kind of expanding his horizons a bit.
I'm hoping we see him in more things. The last thing I wanted to say about Tig was that often the female characters like hers, they have a huge chip on their shoulder that's almost a turnoff, and they didn't go that direction with her, and I'm really glad they didn't.
Yeah.
I think that might be why I love her even more, is because they didn't go that route.
I enjoyed actually most of the cast. I think
it's a great team. It's a great team when they're together, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that there was really too many people that stole it for me. There was, I mean, Dave Bautista did a really good job. Like, I didn't expect to find him. I felt like he was, I don't want to say this and experience backlash. I feel like he was in this movie what The Rock was early on when he was really starting to garner general audience awareness and excitement.
He's not The Rock. Give you backlash over that. There wasn't anything like controversial there.
Because there are some people who are really passionate about The Rock being amazing. And like, I know he's not on The Rock's level, but.
No, he's more like a pebble. in comparison. And I also, I was shout out for Garrett Dillahunt, who played Martin. And I know everybody like hates the character of Martin because he's an absolute prick who basically gets everyone killed. But he's a good actor.
That's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, he's a really good actor. And he, man, that scene with Chambers and then the one where he cuts the head off, I'm like, God, you hate him so much. And then he gets to the tiger and every cathartic feeling you have finally comes to fruition. It was like just a beautiful, savage mauling that you wanted to see this guy get. And he earned it. He earned that disposal.
Two characters earned that. Early on, the guy who was terrible to the women, when she was like, oh no, we need one more person, I was like, yes, he's gonna die. I was like really excited about that because I really couldn't stand the creepy perv. But then the moment that the tiger destroyed Martin, you're right, it was cathartic. I was like, this is the moment we've been waiting for.
Loved it. Now, let's talk about the characters you didn't like and why. We've talked about the ones we did like. We've talked about the intelligence of the zombies, all that jive. Which ones didn't you like? And I say we just take a group agreement to start with Kate.
Kate.
God damn it, Kate. You got your own father killed. I'm pretty sure you got the girl you were trying to save killed because I don't recall seeing her at any point.
She didn't survive. This whole third act was about, or the half of the whole movie for her was about finding Geeta. And then Geeta doesn't even live.
Yeah. And you kill your dad in the process. Like he died. You did the one thing you promised him you're not going to do, which I think everybody knows she's going to do at some stupid ass point in the movie. Which, with no goddamn plan, because there was like 10 minutes before the nuke was going off. What was your plan? You're going to run across Las Vegas and find them and get out of there in time because you just thought they would know where you'd be or something? What kind of stupid, stupid plan is that? That is either a fault of the writers or the character, and I don't know which way I'm leaning. I go back and forth.
Well, the writers wrote the character.
Yeah,
so.
I know, but I mean, if it's true to the character, then it's okay. You know, if it's true to the character, then okay. But on the same token, I'm like, but you wrote just a character that seemed very strong and independent and smart and makes the absolute worst decision of the entire movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure who to blame there, but it was awful.
So do you guys agree that it's kind of, as you know, I didn't expect everybody to live, and I'm totally fine with Dave Bautista dying. It's just a matter of the way that he died. It was just, it felt like such a forced, idiotic plot point that she had to go get this girl and throw everybody to the wind while doing it. It was such a selfish, selfish move and horribly plotted. Would you agree, or am I wrong in that assessment?
No, I agree with that. I would have rather her had to kill him for a different reason, like under different circumstances, not for a different reason. Like he got bit by the zombie and she killed him to stop it. And it makes sense why she would have to kill her dad after he had to kill her mom. So that all makes complete sense. And it seemed like it was predestined from the beginning, but for a different reason. She shouldn't have just ran away like that. I don't know.
She knew that her dad would eventually support her and try to find her friends. So I don't know why she thought it was a good idea to just go by herself. And I fault the writers for writing her character like this because it felt inconsistent because it felt like in the beginning she was there to do this, but she was willing to somehow play by his rules. And she knew that she, in some ways, needed some protection from the group and that she felt comfort with being in the group. She never shined as this solo, independent killer in the group. She just didn't. And so all of a sudden at the very end, at the worst moment, she's like, I'm just going to run off by myself and then force, essentially just cause everybody else's death because now they're just trying to run and find Kate. And it just really bothered me how that story unraveled. I would have much rather, you know, if her dad died protecting her from just a zombie or something, that would have been one thing. But to die, everybody dying because she just wanted to be stupid, I just...
Well not everybody, but here's there's two characters that cause everybody to die. Martin, by going to get the head, that caused the revenge of the main villain, right? That main zombie dude, because he just killed his baby mama. And in the process, the baby.
And how that works, I don't even understand.
Yeah, you know what? Doesn't matter. It's cool. It's different. It's unique. We already talked about that. Should have been here. So you get that, and that guy comes back. He comes to the elevator. Love that. I thought that was a great moment where it kills Cruz, and it's a total surprise, and da-da-da-da. That you blame on Martin, but it's okay, I can buy that because he was the bad guy doing bad things. That's okay. This is a character who we're supposed to be rooting for, who takes every ounce of goodwill that she's gotten and places every character that has managed to get away in complete and total jeopardy for her selfish plight to find this one woman who she doesn't even know if she's going to be there. And she does know that she's only got like everybody there has like 10 or 15 minutes left before a nuke goes off. I just thought it's either horribly plotted or you just for this act, for this portion, or you just wrote one of the worst character choices I've seen in a long time. Doesn't make me dislike the movie. I still really like the movie. It just really took that movie down a couple notches for me.
Can't disagree with any point that you made.
Ah, because at least Martin you're supposed to hate. Now I hate Kate too. Just to kill her dad. And also I do get a point, like this is kind of funny to me. So Dave Bautista gets bit, right? And he turned in 5 minutes, maybe tops, 10 minutes, whatever.
Oh, are you going to talk about what's face on the plane?
Yeah.
Like 2 hours later.
But then you got Vanderho or Omari Hardwick from Power. Yeah, that's the actor's name. But I think it's Vanderho is the character. He gets out of the vault, gets all the way to the plane, drops some money, gets on, has some champagne before he notices any side effects. Is that because, how did he get out of Vegas when a nuke just went off? I don't understand that. I guess the zombie dust magic? Because... yeah, it's not how that works.
And can you really hide in a bank vault and survive?
Because well, if it's built like a bomb shelter.
Yeah, you could actually hide in a bank vault. But once you came out, there's still all the radiation there. It's not like, oh, it all dissipated. It doesn't work like that. I mean, you'd need a fridge, I guess, like Indiana Jones to get out of there. It's just...
right. Well, and then he gave Kate, not Vander... whatever his name is. I'm so bad with names. But when Batista gave Kate's character the money and was like, go save all these people, wouldn't they have also been affected by the blast? I mean, the radius for them to travel into where they were going didn't seem like it was that far. So just realistically, I feel like
if it was concentrated, they all would have been maybe, dead. Yeah. They would have ramifications, but it would probably be like down the road, not right away. So hopefully Kate gets some tumors or something.
I do wonder for Dave Bautista's character if he got bit so much earlier. Because I don't remember the specific moment where he got bit because nobody really seemed to know. So maybe it just happened to be so much earlier in the film that we just didn't notice it. And then that's where that time came from.
During the escape. Yeah. He got bit during the escape.
Oh, wait. We did see it.
Yeah, we did see it.
Never mind. Yeah. So I was like, just stupid. Oh, no. He got bit.
Yeah. It was like three times back in a row or something like that. You know,
just yeah, he even screamed out in pain one of the times. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's just one of those movie things. And it's a zombie movie, so I already let a ton of stuff slide. Like, I am not going to sit there and pick a movie apart like this when it's a zombie movie. But that was a huge leap of logic. That and Kate's plight were two big whiffs for the movie, for the screenwriter.
I also want to know how he got out of the vault. So the dorky guy shoves them into the vault and it closes and you heard a latch. They had have a hacker come in and unlock this vault. And now nuclear bomb falls and dude just graces out and shows up on an airplane when I was like, yeah, there's no way the guy's gonna starve to death, even if he had gotten bitten or not, which we never really saw him get bitten that I can recall.
Mm-mm. And I'm sure there was an emergency release in there, but you're right. There's no way he gets out of there unless the zombie dust kept him alive or zombie virus kept him alive somehow. And it was just so slow because he's so tough. It can even get him through radiation. Maybe that's the explanation for how he got through the radiation, is because he was already a zombie.
He said he was already slightly dead.
Yeah.
It was also left a little open-ended at the end in terms of what he's going to do at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Mexico City to infect.
Well, do you think he's going to stay on there and let it happen? Do you think that? Because they started to notice how he was acting weird, and I'm sure that the flight attendants are well apprised of a nuclear bomb that just went off to kill zombies. Like, I feel like word of mouth is going to spread about a bunch of zombies being in the area. And
well, everybody knew about the zombies. That was
exactly
all over the news. So, yeah.
So it's like they had to have known that he's acting super weird and he looks super unhealthy and he's going to probably come out as a zombie. Do you think that they would stop him? Do you think he's going to stop himself? Or do you think he just infects everyone and gets to Mexico?
I feel like he's going to infect everyone and get to Mexico.
Yeah.
Unless the pilot has a gun on the plane. Do the pilots typically carry a gun?
Sure.
Things I don't know so. About planes.
I think so. But I really feel like his disease is going to evolve into what's called sequelitis, which is he's got to get to Mexico City and infect them so they can
That's
get that
That's
what
sequel. I wondered, too.
Yeah.
That's what I anticipated.
Well, they've already created like a whole world. There's a prequel coming, I think, early the next year, which is directed by someone else, but Zack Snyder was involved in the story. And also an animated show is going to come out from this. It's like a whole universe that's coming.
Whoa. So I had a quick question for you. Is this related at all to the other zombie movie that Zack Snyder did?
No. That was Dawn of the Dead. That was a remake of George Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
So completely separate.
So what did you think of the ending in terms of where no one really gets to live with any of the money they stole and everyone died because Martin had to steal the zombie head and Kate had to be the worst rescue mission and had to go on the worst rescue mission in history? Like, do you wish somebody would have gotten the money that lived and wasn't bitten?
No.
Oh, really? You like the kind of the desperate, sad ending?
Kind of, yeah. I feel like they were really stupid to go in and try and get rich quick off of, you know, risking their lives with zombies. And realistically, in a non-realistic film, that's probably how it would have all happened anyways. They all would have been dead. And if they had gotten out, they wouldn't have had any money. So, I don't know. It just seemed fitting.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not bothered at all at how the character's defeat happened, where they don't survive with money, or if they do survive, they're bitten. I am just really bothered by Kate's story. Like, that's the thing, that's my sticking point here, where I otherwise would have really, really loved this movie. And it felt like it was just a stupid, cliche little plot point that they could have done without, and it didn't feel like it fit.
What would you rather they have done? Like, if you had all control to change the way Kate's story played out, what would you have done?
If she would have left to get Geeta, I would have just had her die with Geeta. Like, I don't think that they would have survived. I don't think that Dave Bautista and his cohort would have been able to get to her in time. But I also, like, I just genuinely feel like it's a lose-lose situation for them regardless, but I just don't like the idea that her very stupid mistake caused many people to die.
Yeah, I would have rather had something along the lines of the Bautista can't get to the helicopter in time for when they have to be out of there, and that's how he died, or something like that, and then the zombies descended upon him or something like that, or he died saving her heroically or something like that, or just, I mean, anything but the way it went down. I just felt like it was more forced than earned in that respect. I didn't like how the coyote died either. I thought her death was kind of dumb. But just because she could have gotten the helicopter in plenty of time. I just felt like she was hanging out there for way too long.
Yeah.
Take the head, throw it, get in the helicopter. Done.
So I think I would have had Gita have turned into one of the intelligent zombies.
Mm.
Recognizable enough so that Kate, at some point through this whole affair, prior to her and her dad having the conversation of, no, I didn't resent you at all for killing my mom. I don't blame you at all for that. It was you left and I didn't have anyone, you know, I would have had her seeing Gita as a zombie be the facilitator of that conversation. Mm, like, you know what I mean? And I think that would have been a better way to go about it.
I like that. That's good. Okay.
Well, why didn't you write the story?
Right? Right?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. I think we are done. I do want to ask, do you guys want to see more? Do you want this prequel that's coming out? Do you want a sequel? Do you want any more Army of the Dead stuff? Or are you just, this is a good one and done?
So I would like a sequel, but not for a couple years. Like, too often we get the sequel and it's a year later, 2 years later, and this is not... What I don't want that too quickly. I want to wait a little bit.
I'm in the middle. I'm not sure. I would have to be... Now, I was really excited and optimistic and didn't really have any hesitations. Now, I feel like I have my own reservations because of how that story worked in the third act that I'm not as excited to see more out of it because I just worry that I'm going to get something that results in a level of disappointment again, even though I did like the movie overall. So, I don't know. I think I would give it an opportunity, but I'm not craving for it at this point.
Fair enough. I want to see more. I just want it tidied up a little bit better. It didn't need to be 2.5 hours. In the same token, I wasn't really bored. So, if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Army of the Dead? I'm giving it $7, and it would have been probably about 8.5 up until that last 20 minutes. Christy?
$6.50.
Okay.
Mine is right on par with you, Aaron. I probably would have gone $8.50 or $9 had they not done the Kate story, and it dropped down to about $7.
Sad times. Well, it was still a fun movie. You should check it out. It's on Netflix. Army of the Dead. Zack Snyder's having a banger year for sure. He's reviving his own career all on his own. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, which is happening this frickin' weekend, as you heard earlier, get out there, see some movies. It's a good time to be a movie fan. We've got some big ones coming. Well, we got one big one coming, and then Cruella, who Disney doesn't even know is going to be worth anything. But that's it. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. I don't even know what the hell I'm saying. I'm just rambling at this point.
What's new?
Kiss my ass, Amanda.
No, thank you.
Where did you go for like 45 minutes? We're doing a review and then you come back and like, hey, did you guys already talk about the character? God damn it!
You know, I got abducted by aliens.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I hope you got probed.
I did, but it was a good time.
Shit. What is happening?
You should try it sometime.
What? What?
Getting probed by aliens? Yeah. No, I'm good. I'm good, thanks.
I mean, you don't know what you're missing. Missing.
It all depends on if they have a gentle touch.
Okay.
Oh, you like it soft.